All I was left with was immeasurable bliss and an intense feeling of being welcomed home, once again, to the very center of my own being. Again, to make sense of this, I tried to focus my awareness on new levels of wakefulness, but instead I became aware of myself sitting in meditation. Easily I entered stillness without any more visions or, shall I say more appropriately, any more visitations into these celestial realities. When entering the states of consciousness that are clearly outside the personal identification we are so used to, it is hard, if not impossible, not to be drawn to our very source and final reunification with what we are in our very essence. The way this entry takes place is via an intense and transformative ecstasy. Ecstasy is always based on an intense and very intimate form of unification. When we unite with the person we love in total love and surrender in sexual abandon, we get a small glimpse of what it means to experience ecstasy. But reunification with the very source of your whole being is in a category of its own. There are no equivalents in physical life. The best we can experience in sexual loving climax is a poor and very distant analogy. Here everything is the pure and absolute original, untainted by needs, desire or wants, a pure selfless handing over, completely in the certainty that this is the only thing there is and that there can be no greater act than this. We are caught in the rapture of realizing that we are a billion times more real and significant than we ever thought we were. This only happens because we have abandoned the last trace of significance in utter and total surrender the moment we cut our ties to our ego identification. However, ecstasy is only an experience, and there is more to our individual and cosmic structure than being reabsorbed into the consciousness pool of our own origin. We are here for a purpose. The whole universe with its uncharted and infinite dimensions is here for a purpose too. One purpose is a limitless expansion and regeneration in new and different permutations of being. The other purpose is a blissful life in service to others. We are not exempt from the great game of manifestation and have our own place in this. We are a part of it, and it quickly becomes apparent that it is not in our design to be reabsorbed into the singularity and to remain dormant in it forever. We soon find that our individual place in consciousness becomes one of service in the same way that we ourselves are served with life. It is service that connects us and maintains the free flow of consciousness, and makes us whole regardless of where we are. The Silent Companion. In my previous book, I reported a spontaneous event dating back to the early 1970s when I was an art student living in makeshift student digs, where I experienced a strange mind-shifting event. While having my breakfast and taking a bite of my sandwich, I stopped in mid-action, realizing that I had lost my relationship to my hand holding the sandwich and then to my body. I became aware that I was not my body. This awareness escalated into a spontaneous state of samadhi. This happened at the outset of my journey, and I still believe that this may have triggered the long series of spontaneous out-of-body experiences that followed, because the identification with my physical self had been broken. The most lasting effect, though, was that I became aware of a new underlying awareness that was hard to explain. It felt as if I was accompanied by a silent presence always. Looking at it rationally, I quickly dismissed the idea that this presence could be some kind of ghost that was following me around. In any case, at that time I didn't believe in ghosts, but it felt as if I was accompanied by a benevolent presence wherever I went. Dismissing any supernatural phenomena as irrational, I figured it must have been a semi-conscious awareness of a higher and more sublime aspect of consciousness, more like an innermost part of me that had a sovereign identity of which I knew very little. Whatever word I used, the feeling was always the same, the awareness of a silent presence being with me always. It felt very benevolent, peaceful and still. I could trust it like a friend and felt it always had my best interests at heart, though not always in accordance with my desires, wishes or intentions. I noticed more and more that when I did something against my better judgment, acted inauthentically or selfishly, it simply was no longer there, but it was not vindictive in any way. In time it became an awareness that allowed me to pose questions, particularly in times of uncertainty or crisis, which were responded to on an intuitive level. I had to find subtle ways of listening to this guidance, which often came in the form of an inner knowing. Response, however, was not a given. I never had to consult or confide in anybody because I knew I could find the answer by listening inside to the silence, and it was given to me in the form of knowing. When I once consulted a friend with a personal issue, I did it against my better judgment and it backfired on me straight away. From then on, my silent companion became my first port of call, as I quickly learned all advice could be found within from a most reliable source. It was also this source that guided my meditation, revealed mantras to me and let me know when it was time to drop them. When reading spiritual texts, it would point my awareness straight to the essence. It guided me through the fires of external conflicts. It patiently taught me what I needed to know on my path of unfolding. When I was on the right track, it would reward me with silent joys. When I was wrong, it would withdraw until I made the appropriate change. I felt no need for any kind of teacher, master or guru, because the source was right there teaching me in silence. Because most advice came in this subtle form of inner knowing and stillness, I began to refer to this aspect of awareness as my silent companion, who I knew was with me always. On several occasions it would reveal its absolute reality. In spring 2013, on a solitary retreat in Scotland, it would emerge fully and demonstrate to me that my silent companion was me and had been me all along. I was no longer seeing it as separate. After this event I had become it, but before this it was my guide and master. Here is an event that demonstrated the intimate nature of this aspect of consciousness and how it initiated a union experience with singularity awareness. The 11th of May 2011, say Maddie the call to unity. I was in the garden sanding down an old chair while enjoying the spring sun. I couldn't tell what the reason for my joyfulness was. I simply attributed it to the fact that I had just completed some commercial work and relished a breathing space between jobs, perhaps added to the fact that the garden was just so beautiful with the birds singing and the flowers blossoming all around me. But that was not it. I also became powerfully aware of a silent presence, not a personal presence, but a presence of being, which saturated the very air I was breathing and lingered on anything my eyes, hands and ears touched. Occasionally I had to pause in what I was doing and let the feelings wash over me, leaving me with a deep sense of joy and gratitude. Then I carried on sanding the chair, enjoying the satisfaction it brought. But the feeling did not leave me. It became more and more persistent and intense. I finally decided to retreat into my meditation room in order to focus my attention exclusively and without any distraction on my companion. Before I could even sit down into the meditation chair, I felt a tingling sensation in my body, rising up my spine and quickly spreading through my body while I slumped down into a half-lying position. As I closed my eyes, instead of seeing the dark shields of my eyelids, I was staring into an intense light. It was a light that was not just in my eyes or even my head, but cascaded like a waterfall over my sprawling body. But unlike water, it consisted of countless fine luminous filaments pulling me upwards towards an enormous sun. I noticed that the moment I lay spread-eagled in my chair, I had already abandoned my persona and ego completely and there was simply nothing holding me back. I had entered a new autonomous mode of existence, which was simply made up of the fact that I was alive, nothing else. My new surroundings consisted of a space of pure light with nothing in front or behind it, just an intense reality of essence, luminous and consuming. But it was anything but merciless. As soon as I offered myself, it welcomed me with intense joy, which instantly transformed into ecstasy I had rarely known before. For a while it was teasing and playing with me, offering new intensities of rapture and pointing my attention towards endless vistas of luminous orbs that were nothing less than the infinite centers of themselves. Each one could have been a whole new universe to explore. I was stunned by the panorama. I felt blessed that I formed such an intimate part of it. As I turned away from the lights, I became aware that I was being elevated into a new reality, where the chair I was lying on and the room itself were no more than vaporous mists, objects of little permanence and reality. What I saw here was essence in its purest form. Wherever I looked, I saw new landscapes emerging, rising out of luminous mists, sometimes as thick as clouds, drifting and percolating through metamorphosing shapes, which created fascinating objects. These clouds were unmanifested matter, shifting landscapes of color of different densities and character, springing into shapes, responding to some mysterious creative impulse and then dissipating. Within no time, I was surrounded by a glorious archway, which expressed perfectly my wonderment about this region, and from there other archways opened ahead of me, each different, created by my continuing thought process, each more glorious as I walked through them. They adapted intimately to my thoughts, inspiring me to look further with a mind that had ceased to think in a linear way, but instead spread out like the rays of a sun, exploring simultaneously its many options all at once. There was space without the sequential movement of time. It was a space made out of existence, being, if this makes any sense at all. As I ventured further through archways of thought, knowing intuitively, explicitly, why every aspect of their grand intricate design was shaped the way it was from its luminous fibers, I sensed the reasons why new archways opened as I progressed, because every archway signified a new realization. Every shift in my perception and thinking pattern simultaneously affected every part of the world surrounding me. I was surrounded by mental matter, not as abstract waveforms of mental energy, but waveforms solidified into incredibly complex shapes, in phenomenal detail, each design element communicating directly why it had to be exactly the way it was. And clearly, whatever was created had at its root a luminous light, a light that gave it sustenance and life. It was easy to focus on the underlying light and identify it as its source for existing in the first place, a light which was a luminous sun or suns. At every end point of thought, shape or feeling were these luminous suns. I saw that all thoughts and all things were rooted in pure consciousness, and all thoughts in their final analysis will inevitably reveal their serene and exalted origin. I am aware that every cliché known to man is likely to be catapulted into life by an experience such as this. I am conscious of the limitation of pressing language into the service of describing something that clearly belongs to a language-free zone, the opposite hemisphere of the brain. But there it is. This light is like no physical light at all, more like a space lit up, a stillness that was wherever I was, a presence of luminosity right beside me. It felt as if it smiled the moment I turned my attention towards it after tearing myself away from the wondrous sights surrounding me. It regarded me like a child, lost in its world of play and, like a loving parent accepting its child with love and joy the moment it turned away from its play, fully assured that it would not be left out of sight for a single moment, no matter how far it strayed. At any time I could enter into the light wholeheartedly and it would accept me with joy and without reservation. It was this reassurance that made me linger and explore my new environments, being aware of my intent for research, but I was more like a child being entranced by the vibrant world surrounding me than a researcher. Wherever I looked I saw new patterns emerging, creating an infinity of finely woven objects. I was aware of the presence of the light, my silent witness and guarding parent all the time, waiting patiently for me to follow it home into its very heart. Each time I called it appeared, reliably and joyfully, and each time it revealed a new and thrilling, yet unchanging, aspect, reassuring me of its eternal companionship. It was this that gave me the freedom to turn my attention towards gigantic rings of fire surrounding me, with symmetrical flames, casting vast changing patterns miles high into an endless sky. Immediately after the first ring reached its apex, another ring formed above it with an irresistible invitation to be carried skywards by its overwhelming force. Simultaneously, I became aware of my body once more and felt a powerful yet pleasantly cool pressure on my forehead, as if some god had placed three fingers on the spot between my eyebrows, urging me to take its energy and let go of anything that was still fastening me to my former self. The ring of fire and the touch on my forehead were the same energy. At this point I was gripped by an intense ecstasy, which was enough to sever any remaining link or attachment I might have had. It was the same light as before, but of a new intensity and of a greater order. The fogs of thought that had seduced me only moments ago were licked away like the morning mists by a midday sun. The sun was clarity, with layers of clarity revealed as each gave birth to a light of even greater intensity. In the end there were no attributes, just the neutrality of being. No insights to be gained, no wisdom to behold. All insights and all wisdom were nothing more than shapes painted into the sands of an incoming tide. There was nothing to be spoken of because there was no medium to convey it. Only stillness, being. For a few further moments, I could see with the eyes of creation, looking out from the center of clarity of an unfolding world of shapes and appearances. Strange shapes that emerged in ever unfolding patterns, creating new worlds around me. I heard a celestial song in the distance, which then solidified into the mundane siren sound of an emergency vehicle. I knew I had spent just over an hour in my chair. My wife's hairdresser had arrived and their animated chatter floated across the landing towards my meditation room. There was a distinct peace underlying the sounds, and peace cemented all the shapes of my old world together again. Deep meditation can give us a preview into the pure spiritual realms of our core consciousness, with which we may be able to merge one day permanently, after all our personal identifications have been surrendered. Although to some, including many mystics, this may be the apex of their realization, it may not necessarily be the ultimate goal, or even desirable. The great question is, why do we have a physical body? Why are we part of this creation process and why would we want to turn our backs on all of this, which is so clearly our reality and by default the intent of whatever power has put us here? Our most powerful urge in life is to avoid hardship and a whole economy depends on escape, from poverty, discomfort, sickness, pain, boredom, torment, etc. What if, instead of escaping, we were to enter into it, wholeheartedly? Not from the viewpoint of our separated individual and ego-identified self by getting lost in the world, but from the vantage point of the creative power that makes and sustains it? This would require realizing our inner core self in an act of self-realization that would change our perception dramatically. It would mean liberating ourselves from our identifications with the outside world and our fixations and instead merging with the core energy and power which drives it at the level of pure consciousness. For most of us our whole self-concept and conditioning is built around the perception of separation. This sense of alienation is where our daily state of mind is rooted. After we profoundly experience that the only thing that has actual reality is our core consciousness, which is at the root of everything and forms the true universal identity of who we are, it is impossible to turn the clock back and see the world as we did before. Everywhere we look we see ourselves in our pure aspect. An outside world is no longer recognized as separate but is instead experienced as home in exactly the same way as we experience home when entering the higher levels of consciousness after death or during samadhi. This means we will instantly enter the higher levels of consciousness after we die. Doing it while still in a body will present us with all the benefits of heaven here and now on earth, while we are still alive, at the same time, it will grant us a place in the non-physical states wherever we choose. The advantage for us in reaching these states now, while still in a body, means that we experience the profound peace and stillness of an enlightened mind, while attending to the day-by-day running of our business, even if we are surrounded by human suffering. This is a paradox difficult to get one's head around. Living at the core level of consciousness, we live in a profound state of tranquility and stillness, still witnessing the pain and pleasures surrounding us but from a position of peace and profound compassion. The paradox is that we can still recognize our pain and the pain of others, but without the suffering. We can also experience the pleasures, but without being swept away by them, all the time being aware of a profound inner stillness that extends into the world around us and makes everywhere we are our home ground. When this happens, everything in our life becomes equally spiritual, because wherever we look we see the manifestation of God if you like, or, if you are an atheist, see pure consciousness. We no longer have to set ourselves apart, we simply are and accept what we are. That is what creates true stillness, and it is also what all the sages, mystics and past masters have always talked about. It is an attainable reality because we already carry it within us. Our core consciousness is already residing in this state of continuous stillness, love and bliss, but as long as we are identified with an illusionary outside world, we are not privy to this observation and experience. The followers of Mahayana Buddhism do not aspire to enlightenment in order to free themselves from suffering, they do so out of compassion, in order to liberate other sentient beings. There is, however, another aspect of looking at liberation. Do we want to escape into the unity and sever our strings to duality, or do we want to enhance, celebrate and enjoy the world of duality with a mindset that is firmly rooted in stillness? We don't hear much about this aspect of a fuller life in the esoteric texts, except perhaps in the old Vijnanabhairavatantra texts, which celebrate and embrace life, by witnessing the grace of oneness in everything from sex to sensual enjoyments. Also known as the Radiance Sutras, the teachings point to an awareness that consciousness is omnipresent and residing within all things. For people practicing out-of-body techniques, this kind of awareness, that consciousness is omnipresent, allows for a new kind of out-of-body travel, by simply not traveling at all. This experience is best described by seeing the physical body simply as part of the inventory of consciousness, which has no greater significance than any other object within reality. Our real self is the space of infinite consciousness that is simply everywhere, the all-pervading reality source of everything in existence. It is the infinite space around us, the chair we sit on, the cup we drink from. This kind of awareness makes it easy to cut the strings that tie us to the world and so liberate us from our attachments, identifications and fixations. When we adopt this kind of awareness, we no longer leave our body, we simply become aware of another focal point within the vast field of consciousness, which could be anywhere, in some dark region or in the highest heaven. However, having our awareness rooted in the stillness of the source consciousness, no matter where we are, we will be equally connected to bliss. The question is, do we follow the whispers of angels, beckoning us and persuading us to let go and follow the sweet sounds of their voices back to our true home in the highest heaven and remain there forever, or do we relinquish our privilege and pitch our place on one of those lower regions, the forecourts of heaven or lower still, as many of us have done before? Realizing stillness within all things doesn't make us refugees from the world of opposites, duality and pain, quite the opposite. More than anything, we will embrace reality and everything that is thrown at us. More than that, we will appreciate it, the pain, the suffering, the loss, because wherever we look we will perceive the secret workings of unity consciousness. But above all, we need nowhere to go because our heaven and our ultimate destiny is already where we are, here and now. Preparations for life after death. One day every one of us will have to pass through the portals of death. We don't have to reach a state of enlightenment in order to enter the pleasant lands, but we can't ignore the fact that where we are now, emotionally and spiritually, will determine where we will go to spend the next leg of our infinite future. We can push the idea of death from our awareness via distractions or entertainments of various kinds, by leading a hedonist lifestyle as if there was no tomorrow. But we will have to bear in mind that what is in our subconsciousness will become our new external reality when we die. There is no doubt that the best way to prepare ourselves for the future is by conducting our life from a place of calmness and inner stillness, here and now in our present, which becomes our instant link to our infinity. We can embrace the infinity of our existence by pursuing a life where every moment counts, and living it by being mindful and aware of our thoughts, feelings and actions, informed by kindness and the loving heart. We can learn to look at our conflicts and crisis points as learning opportunities for building a better base, and treat our inner demons as our educators. We can look at our enemies as our teachers to learn compassion and harness our own authentic strength in order to liberate ourselves from the rule of others. Instead of putting self-interest first, we can learn to appreciate how our actions are experienced by others. The easiest way to accomplish this is by acting, thinking, speaking and experiencing reality by employing the heart in everything we do. Psychology teaches us that we cannot hide our unresolved issues or inner demons if we wish to lead a healthy and balanced life. The foundation of happiness is to be found in a life of balance and psychological hygiene, free from the toxins of negative and destructive attitudes. We are aided by our ability to respond dynamically to situations by not remaining stuck in rigid constructs and hardened beliefs, which are unable to adapt to the flowing forces of nature. Religions of old have tried to make it simple. Do good things and you'll go to heaven. Do bad things and you'll go to hell. Reality is more complex than that and works on multiple levels. We will need to find our own way to our inner heart and authenticity, often via trial and error rather than by following prescriptions. We don't need to read books about ethics and morality, about what is good and what is bad. We simply need to read the Book of Wisdom laid out within us and read in a state of calm and reflection. We can find out how we can love and serve, how we can enhance the world rather than impoverish it, how we can add value rather than devalue it. Every action of love and goodwill, even if it is only in the shape of a fleeting thought, an appreciation, a sense of gratitude, a joy, a happiness shared, will be a stepping stone to higher, more elevated consciousness and bright and pleasant surroundings. By living through the heart, we no longer have to figure out for ourselves what effect our actions will have on others. We simply open our inner channels to allow the most positive energy to flow into us and guide our actions. We can trigger love by appreciation, out of which a loving, empathic and compassionate heart is much more likely to rise. It will be a guarantor for a rewarding life rather than a mind calculating our effects, torn by conflict, obsessed with self-gratification and motivated by greed and self-importance. To keep these channels open and connected to our authentic self close to our source, we can practice regular meditation, engage in selfless service and live life by fostering inner wisdom in calm reflection. If you are part of a religious culture and tradition and used to prayer, making prayer a surrender to God, rather than adopting an attitude of neediness, is far more effective for alignment with the higher consciousness. Offering yourself to God and surrendering your negative issues and sense of self-importance is far better than begging or pleading to God. Some of the greatest saints in our religious traditions have aimed for a marriage and union with God rather than putting God on a pedestal and out of reach. Our prayers should have the closeness of lovers wanting to be united, because God is at the very root of what we really are. As Christians, we might follow the example of the great Catholic saint, Teresa of Avila, whose highest aspiration was to seek a marriage with God. Her legacy shows that she succeeded. Or we can look at the mystics such as Saint Francis, who regarded all nature as the mirror of God and treated everything popping up in reality as being intimately related and a part of him and therefore related to God. Every religion has brought forward their shining lights of sages who provide inspiration and encourage in us the right attitude to develop a powerful connection to our source. It doesn't matter whether we follow Islam, Judaism, Hinduism, Sikhism, Taoism, Buddhism, Zen or any other faiths, as long as we don't get blinded by dogma and fanatical stances. Mindfulness, which focuses attention on the sensations, thoughts and emotions, while remaining rooted in the present moment with an accepting and non-judgmental attitude, can be practiced whichever religion we follow, because it will put us in a position of being rather than becoming. This attitude will keep us in touch with reality and will cleanse our channels for a positive downflow of creative energy. Whatever cultural context we use as our basis, We are best served by looking at the core aspects of our faith, where it connects us to the core consciousness it springs from rather than diluted interpretations and devolved dogma. Even if we don't believe in God or any form of spirituality whatsoever, we can still rely on the simple acceptance that we are and inquire into the mystery of our being,